Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Moving Right Along, the Muppet Movie Podcast brought to you by ToughPigs.com. It's the podcast where we watch Muppet Treasure Island 2 minutes at a time and talk about it a lot. I'm your host, Anthony Strand.
And I'm your other host, Ryan Rowe.
And we are joined once again by our same guest from last week, a person you've probably heard of before. Who is it?
Yar, it's me, Billy Bones. And I got a story to tell yar.
Oh, you've had too much rum, Billy Bones.
Oh, no. Never enough. Hello, I'm Joe Hennis, and I'm co-owner and editor-in-chief of ToughPigs.com. Hello, everybody.
And you have a fun fact to share with us right off the bat.
I do. Okay, so yeah, before we get into these minutes, which I know you're all very excited about. So last week, we were talking about Grawlix, which you may recall is that thing that you see in comics or comic strips, comic books, when a character swears and those swears are replaced by symbols like at, pound sign, exclamation point, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, I think, you know, it's probably the term is probably coined by Mort Walker. Well, folks, have I got news for you. In 1964, American cartoonist Mort Walker, famously of a Beetle Bailey creator, has popularized the term Grawlix in an article that he wrote titled, "Let's Get Down to Grawlixes."
Wow, yeah,
he expanded
I love
that. On that it good. in a book he wrote called The Lexicon of Comicana. So now you know
that's a great title.
That Mort Walker is the most important person in the world.
Yeah, great guess. If you had been on Final Jeopardy and wagered everything, you would have gotten that one right, just as an educated guess. Not to go on a tangent so early, but didn't Mort Walker also have a strip for a while that was like sort of a meta, like a character who was the star of the strip and also creating the strip?
I don't know. He made High and Lois, but you're thinking of Trixie because she talks to the sun and she gives meta commentary to the sun.
That's true. Okay, I'll figure it out.
Here's what we've learned. We would rather talk about anything else besides minutes 7 and 8 of Muppet Treasure Island.
No, I found it. It's called Sam's Strip.
I just found it as well. Yeah.
Yes, the series depended heavily on meta humor and appearances by famous comic strip characters. So, listeners can look up Sam's Strip to learn more about that.
I'm going to read the whole run of Sam's Strip. But first, I'm going to talk to my buddies Ryan and Joe about minutes 7 and 8 of Muppet Treasure Island. And in these minutes, Jim and the boys do some chores.
Chores.
Oh, yeah.
It's happening.
Here we go.
All right. The first thing.
Let's get into it. All right.
The first thing. So Mrs. Blueveridge said, don't forget to. This is what she said. And now she finishes it with, come back tomorrow. She remembered. Come back tomorrow for our lunchtime special. Roast suckling pig. And then she sees one of her pig patrons, looks at her, and then she says, changes it to potatoes. There's a bunch of pigs who attend her, who like patronize her business. Why would she serve roast suckling pig? Why would it be on the menu, madam?
You know why. You know why. There's a Sweeney Todd thing going on here.
Ooh, yikes.
Yeah.
She's murdering customers.
She's killing her customers.
Yep. She gets them all slathered up with ale and grog and whatever, rum. And then she's got a little trap door.
Wow.
And one of them just disappears.
Oh, no.
And then they're in a pie. Wow, this is a dark Muppet movie.
Meat's back on the menu.
I'm sure that somebody somewhere out there, because people are constantly trying to cast Muppets in other stories, somewhere out there somebody has suggested Muppet Sweeney Todd.
Oh, I'm 90% sure I've seen fan art of Muppet Sweeney Todd with Kermit as Sweeney Todd and Miss Piggy as Mrs. Angela Lansbury. What's her name? Well, Mrs. Lovett.
Yeah, well, it should have been anyone, Mrs. Blueveridge.
I was just going to say, has anyone cast Mrs. Blueveridge as Mrs. Lovett?
Yeah, they should have. That'd be good. Just two things. You can do it now, Joe. You can do it. You can commission it.
Oh, my God. I could just do it?
You can just make it happen.
Wow.
Yeah. But
just like she's going to make this pig dinner happen with murder.
But what happens in the movie, the text, not the subtext, the text, is that the pig shoes are dirty looking. She says, no offense, madam. But then the best thing about it is that our old pal, the laundress from Muppet Christmas Carol, goes, ha!
Yeah, that's so... I can't, you know, it's just one syllable, one noise. I can't tell what performer that is, but I laugh at that every time.
Wait a minute. Maybe I read this wrong. I thought that she changed pigs to potatoes, the pig leaves, and then she says to the laundress, no offense, madam.
Right.
Because the laundress looks like a potato. Right.
Oh, that makes sense. I didn't think of that, but yeah, that makes sense. That makes more sense, yeah.
Yeah, and then she is obviously like, I don't care. People eat us all the time.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. But then we get into the real action, because then Mrs. Blueridge starts yelling at the boys to clean up and then to eat their table scraps, and then she yells at them for forgetting to put out the lantern last night, and tells them that if they don't put out the lantern, they're not going to get their table scraps. So that is the stakes.
Yeah, is it fair to say that this is like a Dickensian situation?
I guess so. You mean like Oliver Twist? When you say Dickensian, you just mean Oliver Twist.
I guess, yeah.
This is like when people say that Stranger Things is a Steven Spielberg homage, when what they mean is specifically the bike riding in E.T.
Yeah.
But before Mrs. Bulver does all that, she blows out a candle, but she does it by doing a raspberry.
Yeah.
You notice that?
Oh, I didn't just know. Didn't like,
and she blows out a candle. I thought it was just funny.
I thought she was just making sound.
She did, but the candle reacted.
But yeah, so then she gets mad. And it's funny because, like, what I don't understand about this movie is that Jim and Rizzo and Gonzo are, like you say, like, they're, like, working for food at this inn. Like, right. Jim's an orphan. Gonzo and Rizzo are just a guy and another just guy.
Hanging out with them.
Hang out with them. And they are, like, being treated cruelly by the owner of this inn. And it's, like, not really an issue. It's not what the movie's about. She's not a bad guy. Like, she's not treated like a villain. They don't have to escape from her. But she's like, clean up or you don't get to eat table scraps. And I feel like the movie doesn't follow through on that. Like, that's harsher than how she is treated for the rest of the movie. I don't know. I don't get it.
I agree with you. I feel like later on, it's supposed to feel like a turn. At least maybe that's how I've always read it. Where, like, spoilers, the pirates attack. She's fighting them off. And they're like, and she's like, go on, boys. Get out of here. And they're like, wow, like, that's great. What a great caretaker she's been. And we never noticed. But I think you're right. I think it would have played better if she wasn't just so... It's not just the fact that she's unpleasant, although that's part of it. But yeah, so she's mean, she's nasty to them, and there's no, like, comeuppance to it. There's no, like... I guess there's no humor to it, is really what I want. There's nothing fun about it.
There's nothing fun about it, yeah. And, like, you would think that the way that she is towards them in this scene, you would expect it to be, like, Miss Hannigan from Annie or something, right?
Where, right,
like,
yeah.
She's the villain of the movie, but instead she's not. She's just...
I'm also thinking of the doctor and the nurse from the beginning of Return to Oz, who are trying to give Dorothy electroshock therapy, and then at the end of the movie you see them carried away, like, by a police wagon or something, so it's like they're getting their punishment.
Yeah, but she's in the paddy wagon.
Yeah, yeah, this character is in a weirder gray area.
It's just, like, it's ill-defined, it's poorly written, that she's not good, she's not bad, she's just making choices, and it doesn't really add anything or take anything away from the plot.
Right. But so then we cut to the outside of the inn, where I actually kind of like this shot. We hear Gonzo, Rizzo, and Jim chattering, but we don't see what they're doing from the outside, and then the camera pans down, we pull back, I guess, to reveal that they're all stacked up on each other, right. And that's what putting out the lantern actually means, that they
it's have Muppet to, Ladder,
like, it's Muppet Ladder, exactly.
Yeah,
this predates Muppet Ladder, predates Muppet Man.
Right, Rizzo on Gonzo on Jim's shoulders to extinguish a light outside. Which is, like, that's a cute idea, I really do think.
Yes, and this, in the DVD commentary, Brian Henson confirms what we probably would have guessed, which is that they were being marionetted from above.
Sure, that makes sense.
I just found it interesting that in Muppet Christmas Carol, Gonzo and Rizzo are lighting lamps. And this movie, they are dousing them.
Huh.
Mm.
How about that?
That's true.
They someone start light... the Muppet Wiki article for lamps, comma, the... lit and unlit.
Put out the lantern, not the rat. Put out the lantern, not the rat.
Yeah, they should have done it. They should have done it. Just like, no, but yeah, you're right. In Muppet Christmas Carol, they light, they ignite a light of excitement and joy in my heart. And in this one, they put it right out. Like, here's the thing. I do think that that is a really fun shot. I think that's a fun idea. And then they start talking. And this scene is the pits. It's not funny. It's all exposition and not even good exposition. And it makes me sad that I'm watching a Muppet movie. Like, Ryan is like, he's frowning at me right just, now.
Okay.
So here's what this is what I'm worried about. This whole season is me going to be like bad, and Ryan being like, I don't want to engage.
No, I'm not crying. You know, I'm just listening to what you're saying.
I'll engage. I'll do it. Anthony, tell me what they say. What do they say?
What do they say? Jim just says that he hates his life. Gonzo says that he hates his life too. Rizzo says, if I had a life, I'd hate it, which is like has the cadence of a joke. But like, one, it has nothing to do with Rizzo. It's like the kind of thing where like Howard would say it on the Big Bang Theory. And it would like the audience would laugh even though it's not a joke, because it's like a joke moment, you know?
I agree with you, but one minor change. I know you did say this correctly, but it didn't come out the way you said it. So Jim says, I hate my life. Gonzo says, I hate your life too.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
And then Rizzo says, if I had a life, I would hate it. And I mean, I don't know. I guess like for any story arc, like we need to start in a place where our characters have wants and, you know, decide to go on this adventure. But like, man, we're just starting at such like a downer of just like, like, yeah, I mean, everything just kind of stinks and like everything's dirty. And like all like Rolf the dog was just here and he didn't say anything.
Right.
I don't know. It's just like, okay, I guess happy new Muppet movie, everybody.
Seems like there's another Muppet movie where everything is dirty and it starts with a guy being really mean to everyone and everyone sings a whole song about how much they hate him and then he yells at all his employees.
Yeah.
What right, if there was so, a whole no, song about how everyone hates Jim Hawkins?
Well, but they are starting at the end of this clip. They are about to do a song about like how they want. Literally, the song is called Something Better.
They want, yes.
And
yes.
And it's about how they want to get out of this life. Like that's going to happen. It's just not a good song. You know, so like what you're saying does happen, Joe. It's just
sure. I agree. I'm not saying that that doesn't happen. It's just like
right.
Like we're just starting at such a
right. Moment. But so then what happens is Jim just, I mean, I get it's a plot exposition. It has to go somewhere. I understand. Aww. I do understand that. But Jim Hawkins is going to talk about how his dad is a sailor and he wishes he could, or his dad was a sailor and he wishes that he could do the same. And then Gonzo and Rizzo are just like, you can't leave us because even though you're an orphan, you have a family. It's us. We're your family. And then he's like, literally then, okay, so that happens. Then they all fall over. Okay.
Yeah, I do like when, I hadn't noticed this before, when they're kind of recovering from falling down, Rizzo cracks his neck.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's fun. I like that.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
But so they're talking, it's like boilerplate. I found my, like, they're giving, Gonzo and Rizzo, who should be the comic relief in this movie, are just like, but you found your family, Jim. It's us, your found family. And then Jim, unfamiliar with the concept of a found family, says out loud, be serious, Rizzo. We don't exactly look alike.
Yeah.
Which Jim... just makes Jim seem like an idiot because you know what that, you know what he meant.
Yeah, Jim obviously needs to watch the Muppet movie and follow that bird.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. It's like this, I mean, I know it's a, like, as, according to Rizzo, it's a kid's movie, so we need to tell kids what that means, I guess, or whatever. It just feels like such a generic bad family movie moment.
I think maybe it's trying too hard to set up the Jim and Long John relationship that happens later in the right. movie, but I think that would have still, we would have still gotten it if they hadn't had this exchange. We can see, they should show, not tell us that these three are like a family.
But the thing is that like later on in the movie, you know, and Jim has this relationship with Long John. It's not like he's like, oh, thank God there's like a father figure who is also a human that we could potentially actually be related. Like, it's just the father figure thing. Like, we don't need to talk about this species, like interspecies family stuff. Like, it's still, this is a found family. And if he decided to go with Long John, that would be a found family. The only thing is the species thing. And I don't know. Like, I mean, you guys will see as you go through the whole movie. I'm curious to see, like, if they do hammer down on, like, does Long John call him son? Like, are there parallels between Long John and what little we know about Jim's dad?
Well, we know he was a good man.
Well, and we're hearing here that Jim's
still a pirate.
That Jim's dad was a sailor. He started out as a cabin boy and worked his way up to first mate. So he idealizes and idolizes that kind of man as a father figure.
Right.
And we know this because we're going through it, you know, with a fine tooth comb. But I want to know, like, is the movie deliberately doing that or not? Or is that just us picking up what's really in the subtext of the book?
Right. Well, I mean, as I mentioned last week, Jim's dad dies towards the beginning of the book. So his dad is there and then dies.
Right.
But he is missing that father figure. And that's why he goes to look for Long John. And they keep that here, of course. But I don't know, something about, like, he's already having fun with his two best friends. I don't know. No,
you're right. Well, it seems
it feels weird to me. It always has.
In writing this adaptation, they removed Jim's parents from the story, but then so that he could have more of a relationship with Long John. But it seems like that's creating a lot of the complaints that you've said about what we've seen so far, because that necessitated the creation of the Mrs. Bloveridge character, who maybe doesn't completely make sense. And then, maybe it doesn't make sense to have Rizzo and Gonzo as a family, but not his family, but also kind of his family. But he also still needs Long John to be his family.
Right. And like in the book and in other adaptations, Jim's mom is just kind of like a nice overworked lady. You know, like she's not, it's not like she's such a memorable character. I get why they didn't like just have Jennifer Saunders play Jim's mom, because there's nothing funny for her to do.
I mean, could have, but yeah.
Right. I mean, Laurie Metcalf plays Jim's mom in Treasure Planet.
There you go. She would be great in this movie.
So that's great.
In the book, is Jim's dad a sailor or a former sailor?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
But so.
So in this scene, Rizzo says, like, well, you're a human, I'm a rat, Gonzo's and then Gonzo fills in the blank and says, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was curious if Gonzo has ever verbally referred to himself as a whatever before this moment. Because, like, I know it's, like, it's on his crate in Great Muppet Caper before they get tossed out of the plane. And, like, there's, like, a Muppet comic strip where he, you know, Gonzo's going to use the restroom and he passes men and women. He goes into the one that says whatever. But, like, I wonder, is it, like, this is the point in which he's just committed to, I don't know, everyone keeps calling me this whatever thing, so I'm just going to own it. Or if, I guess what I'm asking is, like, is this where that is established, that he's owning it?
It looks, so I'm looking at Muppet Wiki, which has a section on his page called Gonzo the Whatever. And it looks like Caper is the first reference, and then that comic strip the following year. And then it says he was called a whatever in Muppets Take Manhattan. That's Muppet movie.
The Muppet movie. So Bear,
Bears
and
Dogs and Frogs and Bears and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I don't know.
So yeah, apparently it was in that.
Interesting.
And it's
this isn't really like important for Muppet history, but it was just the fact that Gonzo was like, oh, let me tell you what I am.
Yeah, for him
just
to
whatever
identify himself that way. Yeah.
No, it's interesting. Yeah, thank you. So Jim then wishes out loud that his life was more like one of Captain Bones' adventures, navigating with my father's old compass to wherever the wind may take us.
Yes.
And then he and Gonzo start naming places. Well,
I just wanted to point out James Hart, as we've discussed, is one of the writers of this. this compass will become a significant device later.
That's true.
Following year, James Hart has the screenplay credit on Contact. In that movie, Jodie Foster has a compass, which is a significant device in the script. So
Jodie Foster should have played Jim Hawkins in
this
movie.
And Devin Bishop should have played Dr. Ellie Arroway.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah. James Hart had compasses
better, movies
on the
better. Board. Yeah.
That would have been good. Make just as much sense. It's when she, hey, you know what? She sees her dad. Okay. That movie is all about a person whose dead dad is important in her life also.
Yes. Yeah.
So samesies. Anyways. So after Jim says that, they start naming places. Gonzo says off to Zanzibar to meet the Zanzibarbarians. Now, Zanzibar was a real country in 1881, 1883. It's not now. It's the modern day country of Tanzania.
It's a semi-autonomous region of Tanzania is what I saw on Wikipedia.
Sure, sure. Okay. But so anyways, here's my question. Is this racist?
Yeah, a little bit maybe. I understand why they think it's funny, but I guess in our more enlightened time, maybe we just don't make fun of other countries' nationalities. I don't know.
I mean, it is fun to say Zanzibarbarian.
Yes.
Like, that's a fun thing to say out loud. I did see on Wikipedia, they referred to themselves as Zanzibaris.
Yeah.
They are the Zanzibari people, which not as funny as like the mouthfeel of Zanzibarbarian, but like would have been just as funny. We'll go to Zanzibar to be the Zanzibaris.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah. Cause most people in the audience don't really think about what the word for people from Zanzibar might be. Yeah, I guess I would say not racist, but maybe just tacky.
Insensitive.
Yeah. And then a second later, he's, what does he say? A Zanzibanian.
Gonzo?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So the south. Yeah. So then Jim's talking about normal stuff because Jim's just a guy. He says to the southwest, pirate galleons. And Gonzo says to the southeast, multi-armed Zanzibanian shark women. And that's a thing that's going to happen a few times. Zanzibarian shark women and their exploding wigs of death.
Yeah,
is what he says.
Yeah. Don't forget the wigs of death.
Recently,
Gonzo sure is weird, right, guys?
Well, yep. I was gonna say, Joe. Recently, you and Jared on Worst of the Muppets talked about the Lady Gaga special.
I just listened to that Gonzo episode today. I finally caught up with the Worst of the Muppets.
Oh, yes. Thanks for listening.
But so that's on our other podcast feed, Muppet Fan Podcast with TomFiggins.com.
Yeah.
And you should go listen to it. It's a good one. But in that, you talk about how there's like essentially this same joke in that special. Gonzo says something about exploding socks or something.
Yeah, I don't recall the exact line, but yes.
Tapioca down his shorts. Yeah, it became kind of a just a go-to Gonzo thing to have him just spout off a combination of things that would be weird to interact
and,
with.
And again, it's like a joke when he does that, but it's never actually funny. Like when that's the Gonzo dialogue, I never laugh at it and I never think about it later. And everything good about Gonzo is not those jokes, you know,
it's the equivalent of Statler and Waldorf being like, did you like it? No, I hated it. No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you don't even smile warmly and go, oh, Gonzo.
No,
not really. I just wish you would say something.
No, neither
funny
do I.
Instead.
But
yeah. Exactly. So here's my question then: why do you feel the need to play Angel's Advocate on it
if you also
don't smile at it?
I just like Gonzo.
You don't know.
I just like Gonzo.
I'll tell you why. Because like people Gonzo do like too. It. People, I think people are comforted by, oh, it's the Muppets doing things that Muppets do, which I appreciate that people appreciate that. But one thing that I love about the Muppets historically that really kind of, you know, more or less ended in 1992 was this idea that the Muppets can be themselves. They can be recognizably the characters that you know and love, that you've known for a long time, but they can still do things that surprise you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they could still like come up with new stuff. You know, I hate to bring it back to superheroes, but I'm talking to my two superhero buddies, so we're going to do that. But like when people talk about, you know, like, oh, you just can't find it like a good, you know, story for Superman, you know, for the movies because he's so strong or whatever. And it's like, and no, people have been doing that for 75 years. Like actually, like go into the comics and there's a bunch of writers who are trying it every single month. And, you know, I think that that was what the Muppets did for a really long time. And now they've gotten to a point here in a lot of it through the 90s and into the 2000s where it's like, we just need Gonzo to say something that sounds like Gonzo. We need Kermit to say something that sounds like Kermit, you know, and then people will say, I recognize that. I'll buy a t-shirt.
Right. Calcified is the word that comes to mind. You know, it's just, it's like frozen. It's like frozen in amber. This is,
I like that so much more than when people say Flanderized. I understand Flanderized is like an easy recognizable term. Flanders from The Simpsons, but calcified. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, they're just frozen in place, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so this isn't quite the end. By the other thing I wanted to note about this exchange is that as when they first get started, right after Gonzo, I think it's right after Gonzo says to meet the Zanzibar Barbarians, Rizzo says, here they go again.
Yeah.
And like Rizzo's annoyed that this is, I guess, something Jim and Gonzo do all the time. They fantasize. That's kind of the only suggestion we get of that, you know?
That would have made more sense. Yeah, that would have made more sense if it led directly into the song, because the song that you guys will talk about next week is like all about like, oh, I wish that there was something more. And what if we were doing this? And what if we were doing that? And what if we could be pirates? And you know, like the here we go again while they're, you know, cleaning up the inn, kind of to say like, I don't know, like that, like these guys have been friends for a long time. They're this broken record of this kind of want. This isn't just coming out of nowhere. Like story wise, that makes more sense. But here, you're right. It sounds like the cadence of like, oh, here, like that's a kind of a joke.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's not. That's,
to me, like, I don't know. We'll see more as we get into it. But like when I think of Rizzo in this movie and Gonzo to an extent, like that's what I think of is it has the cadence of a joke.
Yep.
You know? So I don't know. We'll see. But up here, we're actually going to see one that I kind of like, which is that Mrs. Blue Ridge then yells, to the Northwest, dirty dishes. And Gonzo says, how does she do that? Which is going to be a running gag.
Yes.
And I like that.
Yes, that's good.
But, the thing that I didn't understand at the time, and I still don't really understand today, is like she can obviously hear them because they are shouting outside her window.
Yeah.
Like they're being very loud. And we don't know exactly where in the building she is, but we could see they're right next to the building and there's a window on the second floor. As far as we know, she's right there. So the how does she do that doesn't feel like, oh God, she's like on the other side of the planet. She must have super
How could she possibly hear us?
Yeah.
How could she do what? Yeah. No, that means that's nothing to me.
That's funny.
Right. So then they turn around to go inside and Jim says, I'll wash. Rizzo says, I'll dry. And Gonzo says, I'll break, which I like that. That's I think good. That's a pretty solid Gonzo joke. I do. Yep. I like that one.
It's the rule of threes.
And it's much simpler. Like I guess that's what it is. Is like Gonzo shrugging and saying, "I'll break the dishes." Like makes me laugh. Yeah. And Gonzo
being no mugging to the camera.
I'm saying wacky things. Like it feels forced. It feels like the Chili Pepper shirt.
You know? Like that sort of like offhand deadpan Gonzo. We don't see that a lot, but it's always funny when he is.
Well, and whenever I hear it, I always think that's a Dave Goals ad lib. Because I feel like that feels like
this
Dave's
is actually in that screenplay draft.
Oh, so. Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. That's good to know that like they actually wrote a good like line that feels like Gonzo.
Yeah.
As opposed to them being on the set, we gotta fix it. Say something funny, Dave.
So, anyways, then they go inside. Music starts, and we hear the very beginning of a song. Jim sings, "I look around here, and I wa." That's where we stop. So
I'll look around here and I'll wash the dishes like I promised Mrs. Blubberidge.
That's what he does.
That must be it.
That's what he does. So we'll find out. I don't know. Joe, do you have any thoughts about something better, the song that we're about to hear? Because you're not going to be here next week.
I don't off the top of my head. Honestly, it's been a while since I've watched this movie. My wife, Sarah, and I watched it. I want to say it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, like definitely during the pandemic, where she was like, hey, let's watch Muppet Treasure Island. I was like, I don't want to do that. She's like, no, let's just put it in. I was like, are you sure? And she's like, hey, yeah, let's do it. And then we did. And then we were kind of, I'm sure we were like playing on our phones during the whole thing. So like, I don't have a very strong memory of most of the moments from this movie, including Something Better. Because I have decided to focus on Something Better, which is literally anything else.
And that actually does. So we should close it up. Ryan, do you have other thoughts?
Yeah, one thing from the aforementioned June 1st, 1993 draft of the screenplay. There's a conversation where Mrs. Bloveridge tells Jim, Gonzo, and Rizzo that they should be thankful to Mr. Smollett, who owns the inn in this version of the script. So again, they're trying to bring in the main characters a lot earlier. And then they established that Mr. Smollett rescued Jim from the orphanage and Rizzo from the rat trap and Gonzo from the Billingsgate home for the genetically unexplainable.
Just, Billingsgate? Where do you think Billingsgate comes from?
I don't know. Where the same place Bloveridge came from.
Yeah. I would imagine the outskirts of Billings.
I guess so.
So in Montana?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right. Got it. Okay.
Anyway. No, but I think that's funny. I like that.
That feels something. I can't explain why, but that feels like something from the Muppet Show somehow to me.
It sounds like a Jerry Jewell joke.
It does. Yes, that's it does. Probably.
It
does,
has the cadence of a Jerry Jewell line, for right? Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, that I have just like one note that I kind of alluded to last time out of the Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde here. Opening that back up. Does that work? Should I abandon that?
Nope, you're committing.
I should stick to it. All right.
You have two options. You can either commit to that, or you can commit to doing a rap at the top of every single episode.
Those are the options.
That's it. One or the other, Andrew.
I was actually expecting that you were going to do, because you reminded me that Robert Louis Stevenson also wrote A Child's Garden of Verses. So Child's I thought Garden you Versus. Were going to do like A Child's Garden of Facts from the book or something like
I should,
that.
Yeah, maybe I should.
No, too late.
But anyways,
a child's so garden of worses.
A child. I do love everything. So anyways, reopening the Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. None of this is in the book. Nothing that happens in these scenes is sure. from the book at all. Well, because like I said, his dad is alive at the start, and he doesn't really do menial tasks at the inn. You know, he's just kind of there, like he's like helping his parents, but he's not, there's no like his mom is like, you don't get table scraps, like, you know. I don't know why Mrs. Bloveridge is Christian Bale as Batman, but
where's Rizzo?
This is the kind of disease mind that doesn't get table scraps. And so, you know, and there's no like, there's no going out to put out the lamp. There's no talking to his buddies because he doesn't have any buddies. Like,
no,
you know,
Zanzibar.
There's no Zanzibar.
No compass.
Let me double check about the compass.
I don't remember.
Let's see. He has a pocket compass, but it doesn't.
Yeah, but it's one not of the things special.
It's one of the things the first mention of it is that he has. He's getting it from his father, getting it out of his father's pockets.
Oh, okay.
But
so then it sounds like the writers of this kind of read that part
that
and were
ran
like,
with
oh,
it.
Okay,
yeah.
We can use that. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. But yeah, so Mrs. Bloveridge, as we mentioned, completely made up character too. So yeah. I don't know, man. It's just so it's just so different from Christmas Carol.
Yes. You know,
where I could be like, this Bunsen and Beaker's dialogue is from the book.
Right, no, it's much more loosely adapted.
It's much looser, yeah. So anyways, that brings us down to our last part. Joe, we have two questions only that we're asking everyone. First one, what's your history with the movie?
Great question. Glad you asked. So I saw this movie when it came out in theaters. I saw it in theaters twice, so in 1996, I was 14 years old, and so which as we all know, 14 is like that weird age where like you think I really shouldn't be the kid known for loving Muppets, but I still kind of love it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like you know what I mean? Yeah. So I remember going to see it probably with my parents the first time, and being like just so crazy about the fact that it's Muppets on the big screen. Like I mean that really. that really fed everything that I wanted in that at that time. I was also 14 and like not a the type of 14-year-old to like pick apart this movie that we got. Like the movie is a gift, so just enjoy it. The second time I saw it, it was with my best friend at the time. His name is Michael, and we are still good friends. And he and I went like just the two of us. I don't know how we would have gotten to the movie theater. We must have been dropped off. But the part of me is like, all I remember is we sat in the front row, and it was probably an empty theater. But like, if there was anyone there, then like, we didn't care. It was probably a big theater, and there was probably like four people there. And I remember during Cabin Fever, we like got up and danced like in front of the screen. We were just like, yeah, Cabin Fever. Yeah, that's we were into it, into this movie. The only other thing that I kind of have to say about that era was this was also one of the first projects, if not the first project with the Muppets, that I learned about through the fandom world, because I was a subscriber to Muppet Zine. Print in the mail precursor to Tough Pigs, created by Danny Horn. And I remember getting Muppet Zine in the mail and being like, oh my God, the Muppets are making a movie? And that blew my mind. So that's pretty cool. Like, that's something that I think we kind of take for granted nowadays. It's like you hear about things online,
so
especially
early.
If you're in a fandom. Yeah, so early.
Yeah.
And like, you know, that was, you know, I'd be a little bit like a before the internet, I think we would just like read about a movie that's out in the theaters now that you'd never heard of before, or like you'd see a trailer and that's the first you hear of a movie. So yeah, that's my memory of that. The other thing that I wanted to mention, unrelated to seeing the movie in the 90s, was as many people listening to this may remember, Ryan and I used to be roommates. We lived together for like 8 years, and we had a Muppet Treasure Island themed bathroom.
Yes, I did not have this in my notes anywhere, so I'm so glad you remembered to bring it up.
I had to. I think it started because between the two of us, we had all four of the Happy Meal toys.
Yes.
And we put them out in the bathroom because they're bathroom toys. So we put them out in the bathroom, and then we were like, well, how much Muppet Treasure Island merch could there be? There's not that much out there. So I know that we got the little golden book and we framed it.
Right.
We put that on the wall.
The storybook.
We had the.
Do either of you still have it?
I think it was yours, Ryan.
Have it, yeah.
I took my Sam the Eagle Palisades figure of him dressed as Sam Arrow.
Yeah, I feel like that was the centerpiece of the Muppet Treasure Island bathroom.
Yes, because that went above the mirror, I remember. And years later, when you moved out and my now wife, Sarah, moved in, and it's like, okay, time to like not have a Muppet Treasure Island themed bathroom anymore. We took everything down except for Sam Arrow. Sam Arrow lived in that bathroom until the day we moved out of that apartment. Muppet Treasure Island was a very important part of our lives, by which I mean just me and Ryan.
That's true.
Living
yes.
in that apartment. Yeah.
The other thing we had was in the early days of Muppet Wiki, we found a behind the scenes or promotional photo of one of the rats, and we printed that out and framed that and put it on the wall as well. Mr. Plagueman the rat.
Mr. Plagueman. Yep. I forgot about that. Yeah,
that was there too.
What fun we had.
Yeah,
what a great time.
All right, and then the other question is, where would you rank it among the Muppet movies?
Oh man. All right, well, here's the thing, y'all. I think it's got to be dead last.
I thought so.
It's got to be dead last. And I mean, it does pain me. We're talking Muppet movies. I can't count like Elmo and Grouchland because I don't remember that one quite as well. But like just the Muppet movies, you know, Muppets from Space at least like has really fun stuff in it that I still think about. Like I think the Brick House number really carries a lot of the love of that movie through. And there's like fun stuff throughout, but this one I gotta struggle to think of the parts that I really like, and the parts that I really like are also like, well, I like it because I liked it when I was 14, or I like it because I like Muppets, not because it's good. So I know that there's people out there who love this movie, and I apologize to all of you.
That's
apologizing for opinions, but
that's how I feel.
Yeah. But one thing I do like is I like watching bad Muppet things and like criticizing it until we're blue in the face, which is why I am so excited about the rest of this podcast series, because I know that there's going to be a lot of love in the critiquing, even if the content is not great.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope you're right. Well, that's nice of you. You're a nice person. All right. Well, that brings us down to the end. Thank you so much, Joe, for being here. As always, always a pleasure every time to have you on the show.
It is a joy to be here. It's a joy to be a small part of this podcast. Easily my favorite podcast that I do not physically produce myself.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, that's great. Listeners, you can always find toughpigs.com on the internet, Facebook, Blueski, Instagram. We're all over the place. You can become a patron of ours on Patreon. We would always appreciate that. You can email us with any thoughts about expositional dialogue at movingrightalong@toughpigs.com. You can follow Ryan on Letterboxd at Movies Are Neat. And you can follow me on Letterboxd at Zeppo Marxist. You can follow Ryan on Blue Sky at me, Ryan Rowe.
Yes.
At me, Ryan Rowe. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Durwood Clapper. Joe, once again, remind us where our listeners can find you, even if it's just on the wind.
It sure is on the wind. It's also on all the Tough Pigs channels. We're at Tough Pigs everywhere you like social media, including like TikTok. I try my hardest to keep up the TikTok. I know Becca's been doing our Tumblr. Whatever you like, social media wise, we're there.
Thanks for letting me do a TikTok about trying out my new RCA Selectivision player.
Dude, if you want to do a weekly catch up on what's going on with your RCA Selectivision player, I will gladly make sure that we post it on our TikTok.
All right.
The only other place where I am, if you're at all interested, I'm not actually on Letterboxd for now, at least. But
Zeppo Marcus, Zeppo Marcus, Joe.
I'll be Zeppo Marcus. Sure. No. But I do write weekly movie TV reviews of everything that I watch throughout a week because I watch a lot of stuff. But I post it on a public Substack, which is for free if you like free things. So if you just go to substack.com and you do a search for Joe Consumes Media, that's all one word. Then you could find it and you could subscribe and hear what I have to say about things that aren't Muppets.
Yeah, you're talking about everything there. Movies, TV shows, concerts that you go to.
Yeah, books that I read. Yeah. Sure, yeah. Anything that I consider media, it's there. And I have opinions.
Yeah, and it's sure, always fun to read. Your reviews are always short. It's just like a quick paragraph about your thoughts. And I always enjoy reading them.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you dig it.
And then I like telling you which ones I've seen. All right.
Yeah.
All right. That is all. Thank you so much to Morgan Davey for designing our logo. And thank you to you listeners for joining us once again next week for another episode of this podcast. Goodbye.
Wherever the wind may take us.
I hate my life.